Okay, then let's get started. So we have up on stage James Loden yakking about Python. Some of you will remember from your compiler classes maybe, or from other work. He's one of the team working on a COBOL front end in GCC, and now you may think, okay, COBOL was what my grandfather used maybe or something, but COBOL is still alive. Did it have a new standard released recently?
Yeah, 23.
There you go. And you use it. Diversity in programming languages. You use it every day indirectly, probably for financial transactions.
You may well have used it this morning.
Yeah. There you go.
I tend to think that the 3 years I've spent on this is a lot of work, but I've learned today to appreciate how much other work has gone in to the thing that we are contributing to. We set out some years ago we decided it's time for a real free COBOL compiler, and I proposed we should add it to GCC, and that is what led to this presentation. I'm going to talk to you about why that is a good idea, and why I had no idea what I was getting into, and what I've learned in the process. All of the large firms, I would say, in the 1970s and 80s wrote their books and records software in COBOL, and that's how we run our financial businesses everywhere in the world yet now. The chances are that your ATM transaction yesterday went through a COBOL program that was written in 1980 or so. There are estimated to be billions of lines in use still today, and there was a period some years ago in the 90s when some COBOL applications, for example, were moved to Java because that was the new thing. Those were the easy programs. The hard ones are one massive spaghetti that you don't even want to know what it looks like. And the only way you can move it to a new system is by taking that source code and making it run on a different computer. You're never going to re-engineer it. If it were, I wouldn't be here. The banks, or any of these institutions, spend a fortune running their proprietary systems on emulations provided by vendors for machines they haven't made for decades. That costs a lot of money. I just want 10% of that money. this is an ongoing thing. We're working now, actually, with someone. I'll go into more detail later. That this idea is you just take the code as you find it, however it may be, you compile it, and you run it to a different machine. So we are targeting, we're targeting ISO as a standard, because you have to go somewhere, plus whatever additions are needed by some particular house to build what they need for their purposes. It's so old, Bacchus-Naur hadn't started yet. So yes, we have a grammar. No, it was not defined for anything like an LALR machine. It is an all-encompassing thing, but there is no place to go to get a library, a standard library. When COBOL was defined originally, there were no functions. There was no recursion. There were no local variables. Your program had stuff, it worked on it, and it produced things. It's also a gigantic language because it takes all of the problems that you have as an application programmer and puts it in the compiler. So if you want to convert something, there's no printf string. You just move your variable from one thing to another. That's a compiler's job. It's very fast because if you aren't doing anything in particular to check for, say, runtime errors, right, like length of the variable or something, that's the default behavior because 1957, we run as quick as C at the bottom. There are other features that can slow it down, but that's to take care of things that you would like to take care of, like, did I write to a place that doesn't belong to me? Somebody suggested that C++ is an easy language to compile, and I think there's reason to believe that's true. This is a big language. And that's not the biggest one. I checked GNU COBOL recently. Their sizes are about twice that now, those numbers, in terms of terminals and rules inside the grammar. And this is just one of the verbs. You don't just name the things past the arguments. You say by which way you want to do it. And if something goes wrong, you have a way to capture that too. That's also handled inside the system. It's not try and catch, but it's another such exception system. It's work. I've been doing this for a while. That's that's the price tag on my version of C programming language. I entered into this saying, okay, we're going to write a compiler. And I understood at the beginning it was just the front end. It turns out that my work is chapter 4, section 4. Everything else is the compiler. I entered into this not really knowing, 15 minutes, okay, that's good. Not really knowing what this was going to mean. And I had never written such a thing as I'm working on now. I had used Bison for smaller tasks. But I didn't really, you know how it is, right? You start out trying to figure out how to do something. That's the way I worked on it. And there's some distance between knowing what you have to do, reading about how it's done, and then actually getting there. And this is the sort of answer I had to find my way through in order to learn what we were doing. And there's plenty, and how to say this? There is no royal road, meaning to say, no one will tell you how to do this. All you can do is pick up the pieces and plow through it. I recommend, as a life proposition, that you begin every problem by knowing the complete domain, the problem domain, perfectly, and the tools you're going to need perfectly. That, I think you can guarantee, will lead to success. In my case, I substituted what most programmers have, which is 90% of programmers think that they're above average, so why not just do that? There's a relatively small number of people in the Bison world. Has not been easy, I don't think, as a person using that project to find people who can help me understand how to solve the problems I'm having. So that's just a qualifier for like what's life like in the world of a guy who's writing a parser. Also, I had to learn that Bison and Flex, the Lexer and the parser, it's really an odd thing in our world where you've got two projects that I don't know to what degree they talk to each other. They communicate and cooperate. It's not evident from what I've seen that there's very much communication like that. But they share global variables. They share functions. They talk about each other a little bit, but they don't say the same things. So that was that's a stumbling block that I have no idea how to solve. But I think it's a gap in the world that we work in. When you are writing your parser, there are two levels you're working in, or maybe more. You are defining the metadata for your language in C, and then you're using C to tell Bob Dubner to generate the code for that stuff, please. It was not clear when I began, and it's still a little bit fuzzy for me, where those definitions have to lie and why it's sometimes difficult to understand why Bison doesn't understand what we're talking about. But I have found that we were able to solve almost all the problems in the COBOL grammar just using good old precedence. That is to say, you're always defining one thing in terms of another. If you are, you know, it's a little bit like a make file, right? You just work your way up to the left. And then what do I spend my day? I spend tracing. I just looking at the results. What did the machine do? We moved from state here to state there. We have this. We're looking for that. It's not there. Oh, that's the error. Okay. I also discovered that if you read these books at the beginning, they say, oh, well, we have identifiers. How do we change? How do we distinguish a function name from a variable name? Well, in my case, the function names are all defined. They're all statements. It's call. It's read. It's inspect. So I don't have the. I know the names, and I know all my variable names because COBOL has four sections, and one of them is the data section. And that's where you put your variable names. So those are all. So I didn't have the problem of here's a string. I'll pass that off to the parser and let him figure out. Like I could separate them out and have different kinds of tokens for different individual pieces, and that's there's magic in that. That's what you want to do. The more types you got, the less you're going to have to worry. Bison itself is a complex beast. It's not clear to me who's at the helm. There are a lot of pieces being added in different ways to do different things, and they all look very interesting. I just don't know which ones I want. I learned that there were some things that were quite useful, and then not. So if you have an optional term in the grammar, and that thing, you know, obviously can be substituted for the thing that could be there, then you can use the precedent thing to convert the empty version of it to the same precedence as the thing that would be there if it was present. That works great. If you have a conflict and you simply say, oh, well, that rule needs higher precedence than the other one, very often that won't work. Somebody in this room might be able to tell me why. But that has been a dead end more than once. So a lot of work went into Bison counterexamples. It's something that I think someone spent a lot of time on. I myself have tried that feature several times, hoping for a magic solution, because I need those frequently. But eventually I've come to find, at least for myself, it doesn't help me that much. All it does is produce for you the path that you can actually trace through yourself back through the report if you look at the state machine. So yes, it could be resolved different ways. Sometimes it helps me to think, doesn't matter, it's okay, we can take this shift, we don't have to worry about the reduce. I did try to run the graph on my grammar. That result never came back. I gave it 24 hours, but I never got an answer. So I'm not sure why that feature's there. I guess as a tutorial thing, if you had a 7-line grammar and you wanted to understand how things operate. But I had to wend my way through all of the different things that it could do. This feature set that I was talking about is, and I don't know the answer. I only know the answer I found. And I think that's true when you're in a complex environment. You just pick the pieces that work for you, and that's how you land there. So Tim Todi, you'll remember that from Perl. There's more than one way to do it. There, you can put options into the grammar itself, or you can put options on the command line. I chose to think that you could probably run the same source file with different options, so why put them in the source file? Put them on the command line so you can choose it. That's the route I went down. But there are pure parsers. You can push them. You can use the C++ interfaces. You've got the general something parser. You've got different versions of parsers that can be produced from the same text file. And you have YAC emulation. And so I had to decide what not to use. And I think what we wound up was fairly vanilla. There is a really cool feature, though, of the way they've separated out the pieces of C code that have to go into the grammar. And they don't do a great job, if you ask me, of describing how that works. But these things of separating out what the early part of the metadata needs in order to describe the data as versus the way we're going to generate the code that requires and provides is very, very useful. And locations, you can't write a debugger if you don't have locations. So I would recommend, if perhaps I'll send this to the bison folks, that you separated out your code that's going to the pieces that you need into different files, and use those brackets to tell bison what the way they belong. It's really handy, actually, if you get enough C code in your YAC file to put it into some include somewhere, because your editor will make you a lot happier. If you use these two, if you've got a printer type for every semantic type in your union, then you get nice outputs like this. And there ought to be a rule that says, or there even ought to be a warning that says, hey, you defined a type, where's the string for it? How come I can't see what this looks like? You're going to want it. And that, so what you see here is a reduction for the varying part of the perform of one of the four types of loops. And we know that we've got some keywords, we've got varying, it's coming from a numeric display, that's a bunch of digits in a row that we can use like a number, and it's got a name. And this was tricky because names don't usually have hyphens in them when you get to the assembler. And there's a literal, so that was probably a three or something, and boom. And so I'm able to look at this trace and refer right back to the source code and see the pieces that are being operated on. Do not open up your debugger on the outputted on the object file that is compiled from the C that was generated by the bison. You just won't like it. You don't run GDB on make. You don't run GDB on that either. It's just awful. What you do want to know is what the rules mean. You're using a system that is declarative, so you have to think about what the rule says and how they operate. That's the way you get to the answer. And I think I'm just about done, except to ask you to help me solve my problem. What you see here is what you would like to write in a lot of languages, right? The second thing is much more easily typed as the first thing, but ain't easily parsed. I'm on version 8 of my test for that one, because when you get to C, you don't know if C belongs to B, means it's relating back to A, or whether C is going to be followed by a relational operator and B just an ordinary expansion. So you hit that spot and you think, what I need is LAR2, but I don't have it. So, but maybe there's someone here who does know. So that's why I'm here. And I'm done. Thank you very much for your time. I'm glad you asked that question. The man asked, why didn't I write a handwritten parser? And the reason is because bison has saved my bacon. I don't know how to do that. I do know this. Many times, every week, not every day, but every week, the bison output tells me I have an ambiguity in the grammar. That can't be parsed. It finds the mistakes that I would be putting in freely if I was writing it by hand.
Any more questions or suggestions for this issue?
I'm here all day.
Okay, then thank you again.
Thank you.